to the Commercial Property Investor Show. I'm your host, Jerry Alexander, and I'm super excited to introduce you to our guests today. This podcast is all about the letting of space. You see, we're all in the space business. Whether you have a one-bed flat or a large care home facility, a single-storage tiny-whiny crate, or a massive industrial building, the principles of buying, financing, refurbishing, letting, and managing that space are all the same. The offer, of course, can be very different, but the outcome for the private investor is the same. It's about getting a good return or an ROI on your space investment. Whether you choose to operate the day-to-day of that space is up to you, but the actual ROI on the space is something that we all have in common. The residential market and commercial property markets are not really that different. They're certainly not different universes, as some might suggest. They're similar in many ways and are becoming increasingly more interchangeable. Today's discussion, we talk about a development that started out as residential, which was converted to commercial a number of years ago, and now is going back again with a commercial to residential development. I'm sure you're going to love this conversation. So, yes, you're right, I did say guests. For this interview, I was joined by two guests, Stephanie and Nikki Taylor. So not only was this my first interview with more than one guest, it was with two fantastic investors who are also sisters. Stephanie and Nikki are well known within property circles for the use of the rent-to-rent model and the HMO strategy. In fact, not only do they now teach people how to do this strategy, they've also written a fantastic book on the subject called Rent-to-Rent Success. But HMOs is not their only strategy, which is something we'll go into today in this discussion. In fact, their first entry into commercial property was actually a number of years ago and was part of a well-thought-out plan. So listen out for that as the conversation develops. We'll also talk about how to find a success formula for working with close family. Stephanie also has her own podcast show called the Rent to Rent Success Property Podcast, and I was lucky to be interviewed for an episode back in March this year, all about our preferred model of CMO, the commercial multiple occupancy. So, without me waffling on anymore, let's share with you this great interview. Welcome to the podcast, ladies. Thank you so much for joining me. Stephanie, Nikki, it's fabulous to see you both here. We've been a wee while since we last spoke, and I've been admiring what you're up to on social media and some of the projects you're working on, and really want to talk about that today. But it's just super to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, Jerry.
Indeed. Lovely to be here, Jerry.
Yeah, and you know, you're my first dynamic duo on the podcast to interview, so it's nice to see you both here.
What a way to start, Jerry.
That's right, yeah. Start at the top. So, ladies, for those that are listening, you guys have had a really fast start to your career in property. You've been doing it for about 5 years, is that correct? Yeah. And you've come at it from a different angle, and I'm really intrigued about that, because I started off with resi, just with simple buy to lets, but you didn't bother with anything simple. You got straight into HMOs. And I just want you to maybe talk through for the audience, A, what an HMO is, of course, and how on earth you even started with that strategy. Can you maybe just go into a little bit of detail how that all happened?
Yeah, well, I was very tentative at the beginning about property business, the idea. I hadn't really seen myself in that world at all. And actually, it was 2016. So that's taking us just five years. Yes. 2016. And I started to delve more into the world of property. And I had a little spark because my mum had been ill, and it just made me realise I wanted to have a bit more flexibility. So it gave me a little bit more bravery to try things that perhaps I thought I wouldn't be able to do. And when, as you know, Jerry, you go into the property world, property events, and you find out that there's a world, it seems like a secret world, the Aladdin's cave of ideas, strategies, and people doing incredible things. And some of these people, Jerry, unlike yourself, who's more of a superhero type, but some of these people look like ordinary people. And that encouraged me, because I thought, oh my gosh, these ordinary people are doing these extraordinary things. And what we heard of there is the rent to rent strategy, where you can make money from properties you don't own. And there's an ethical way to do that and to really help landlords out. So we started basically doing rent to rent, which is in essence, it's managing other people's properties. So we rented a property, paid the owner a guaranteed rent, did the property up, charged tenants a higher yet still affordable rent, and we made the money in between. And for each property we managed, we could be making anywhere from £500 a month to over £1,000 a month. And the final piece of that puzzle is what you mentioned, HMOs, that we were managing these properties as HMOs, houses of multiple occupation. And what that means, as you know, is that the houses are like a house share, what people know of as a student house share. Often they might be familiar with a student house share, where each person has their own bedroom and then they share the kitchen and they either share the bathrooms or they may have an ensuite bathroom.
So it's really interesting, this, because when I first started out on, education, and certainly with the podcast, I've had to try and work out where's my niche. Yes. And for me, it was this commercial multiple occupancy. And I obviously looked at HMO and thought, look, you know, that's a niche within the property market. And as you say, it's a strategy some people never even heard of.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, CMO, I'm commercial multiple occupancy. It's kind of similar. We're just doing it with different types of property. Again, another strategy. Mm. But what I find really amazing about the HMO and the CMO model is how much extra revenue you can generate. It's quite astounding. And when you're outside looking in, you think, well, why would you know, people looking in, you know, buy-to-let's the only thing, the only choice in town, right? But then you start looking into these strategies, both through the commercial or the residential, doing the multiple occupancy, done well, they can be great for the customers, and there's a really good margin in theirs. But at the end of the day, we've moved so much further on from the rental model more into a service model.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, it's about the service, and that's what people are paying for, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we've been very proud of with our business. The rent-to-rent business is called HMO Heaven, and we have brought in a team to manage that business, and we've still managed to keep those really high service standards. And you know, with letting agents, it can often be difficult to keep those reviews high from tenants, because many tenants or housemates will only want to review if something's gone wrong. But one of the things that we're proud of is when you Google HMO Heaven, and on Google, the Google reviews come right up there, and we've got over 80 five-star reviews, a mixture from many housemates but also landlords in there as well.
Sorry, Nikki.
I was just going to add that, yeah, one of the values that really drives everything we do is to create that win-win-win. So a win for the tenant, to provide them with a lovely home to live in, a win for the landlord, guaranteed rent, freedom from tenant management, total peace of mind, and also a win for us, you know, a business, a viable business model that generates profits for us. And keeping that and care at the heart of our business means that we can deliver in a way that we're really proud of and people respect and like.
Great. I'm really glad you brought it up, because within this strategy are many sub-strategies, aren't there? And you guys have got a few things going on, haven't you? As well as writing a book, of course, you also spend time now helping others get into this business. You help other, as in how to run an HMO business.
Yeah.
You've invested your own properties now.
Yeah.
And of course, you have the whole rent-to-rent model, or the support for landlords who want to get into HMO but actually don't want to do anything other than give somebody the money and then get the return and have that investment. And you guys offer all those things, don't you? I mean, how do you manage to keep up with it all?
Well, we've got very defined niches. I suppose I'm more on the Rent to Rent Success podcast, the book, the promotion, and Nikki's more on everything else.
So operation, management, keeping our staff.
The real business. That's, I mean, you know, it's something I want to ask you later on, but I'm going to ask you it now. How have you dealt with the whole sibling relationship in business together? I mean, there'll be some listeners that really, you know, find that difficult in their own lives. I mean, how have you managed? There must have been some rubs. You clearly get on well, but there must be, has it been through having well-defined roles?
Journey, Gary. At the beginning, if you'd have asked me that question before we started, I'd have said, absolutely not. There's absolutely zero chance that we'll be working together. But it was just sort of fortuitous in part. Stephanie was at a period in her life following mom's illness that she was really thinking, what do I do? How do I get more flexibility? I was in a similar juncture because fed up with the corporate world, you know, 20 odd years in corporate financial services, I'd kind of had my fill. And we wanted to do something. It just so happens that we both saw property as the opportunity and decided, well, if we're going to do property, let's do it together. And in that moment, in that coming together, we realized that actually all of the things that might get on your nerves when it's just a normal sister relationship or sibling relationship, we were able to put aside for the best interest of the business. And very early on, from the very start, we defined our roles and responsibilities. So I clearly knew where my bits would be. Stephanie clearly knew where her bits would be. And we would run with those parts and then come together where we needed the other support.
Yeah. Yeah. So that there's not been too much falling through the gaps. You've managed to deal, because those are the bits that maybe where the conflict come, aren't they? But you really managed to set those parameters apart.
Yeah, I think it helps that we're a bit older. And I think you just begin to see things a little bit differently. Yes. And some of the things that you think really, really matter and they get really fired up about when you're younger, you actually think, do you know what? This actually doesn't really matter. So I think Nikki gives me the final say on anything to do with marketing, promotion, business growth, business development. And I give her the final say on anything to do with accounts and the legal stuff, you know, because I...
Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
I don't want to read the contracts at the end of the day.
I mean, how many landlords do you deal with now on the letting side? I mean, just or rooms do you deal with? You know, what sort of scale have you got to know?
It's just over 100 rooms, but we are in the process of giving some properties back. I think over time as well, we've become really clear and focused about who we want to be in a relationship with, and some people or properties are not meeting the standards. So yeah. So we're giving those back. And I think over time you just see as well that you really want quality in your business rather than quantity, because it's to do with how efficient and effective the properties are that we have, because in business the 80-20 rule rules. So yes, there are, you know, the worst 20% we don't want to manage anymore.
Well, if anyone wants to look at some of those properties, it's HMO Heaven, isn't it? Is it .co.uk or .com?
Yes, .co.uk, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, so they can go see, I was looking earlier on, it's a great looking website, a lot of detail there for landlords. And then, of course, there's a separate website for rent-to-rent success, which I guess is that maybe more your side then, Stephanie?
Yeah. So basically, Rent to Rent Success is sharing with people the ethical 6-step system to get started in property without buying it. And basically, it's when we started doing HMO Heaven back in 2016, and I put up a few screechy videos about going around the houses. Hello, hello, hello. But people were really interested. And, you know, we were getting so many emails saying, oh, but what to do about this? What to do about that? How to do this? How to do that? And like a lot of people, you know, we had that imposter syndrome where we thought, oh, well, we're not in place to explain this to people, but we would just point them off in other directions. But eventually we got asked the question so many times, and we saw also some of the resources that people were buying quite expensive, that weren't very good. And we thought, do you know what? We actually could do this a lot better and just add a bit of care and detail, obviously with Nikki's detail to it. I think I was the overview of the course and writing the materials, but Nikki added all the detail and the step-by-step and the checklists to each part, so that it really is super practical. and action focused.
That's great, and I can totally relate to that. Being asked the questions, all for me, most of it's up here in the head. I don't have a nicky to necessarily pull it all out and get it down, and you know, it's a challenge. But you do recognize that actually, over time, just through doing the actions that you do learn a lot, and there's lots to share, isn't there? But part of the key thing, of course, as you say, Stephanie, is actually being able to present it in a way that's legible. And in a system, really, and systems is a big thing in HMO. Have you developed your own systems? Do you use any proprietary systems you've brought in from outside to actually run the HMO business, or is it something that you've just organically built your own way of managing that?
It's a combo, Jerry. So for our property management system, we use Arthur. And that's really helpful, not least because it links through to Xero, our accounting package. But then in regards to how we actually do stuff, a lot of those we've created as we go and as we've been on the journey. As something comes up, we realise, we need to put a plan or a process around that to make sure it doesn't happen again. An example would be the red flags that we've created in regards to finding potential tenants and the vetting process. And if these red flags appear, we know that ultimately that's probably somebody that we don't want to move into our property.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, other useful, really useful things at the houses, an example would be putting key safes up to avoid those antisocial, I'm locked out of my room, can you come and let me in at 3 o'clock in the morning? So internal and external key safes to facilitate and to allow that.
Some of that stuff just comes from experience, doesn't it? And like you say, if it keeps happening and you're having a knock on the door effectively telling you, look, you need to change this. The world is telling you need to change this strategy. But interestingly, it's when you start bringing in team members that the red flag system you're talking about, even though you've already got that in your head or in your gut, you've kind of, those little things come up, don't they? And a little tick, and you're like, oh, hold on, that's not a good sign. But it's trying to get that into a system so that your staff can do that without having those instincts about what that actually means. It's quite challenging.
Yeah, exactly. You always have to follow your gut is one of the things that we've learned in business. Your gut doesn't often lead you astray, but you're right. You have to somehow get that documented so that you don't feel the burn twice. If you've come a cropper over something or something has presented itself, you don't want to fall in the hole again.
That's right. Okay, so for our listeners, we're all about commercial. And it's really interesting to look at the parallel here with HMO and CMO, which is really what I focus in on. But in the overall context of commercial, you do have lots and lots of different options for buildings. And one of the things I really try and focus in on is working out what an area needs, like a geographical area, working out how the market is, and then looking for problem buildings that might be able to create a solution that fills the gap. So that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be renting out for commercial reasons. It might be an HMO. It might be changing it into residential. Mm. So I know you guys have got a project going on just now where you've got a commercial property that you're looking to convert into flats. And can you maybe just talk us through a little bit of why you've moved into that? Because I think, is that your first one that you're looking at? Yeah.
First commercial to residential conversion. We do have other mixed-use properties.
Right. So what made you look at this project and how different has it been on your other types of projects that you've done before that are already in a residential classification? Who wants to talk me through that?
Nikki.
So back to summer of 2017. So we'd only been doing our business for a year and, you know, all bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, looking for opportunities. We found that there was quite a lot of demand for HMOs, which is what we were looking for on the market, to buy a ready-made HMO to add to our portfolio alongside our rent-to-rent properties. And it came into focus that actually there are a number of commercial properties that actually looked like houses from the outside that we could possibly utilise and then change one of those into a HMO, into residential. And obviously, with the buying up a commercial property, it's generally much cheaper than buying the equivalent sized residential property. So that was really the thing that pinged our interest, that there's this opportunity to buy at a lower level and still then get the value post-refurb or post-conversion. So yeah, we stumbled across our first property, or the one that we're doing now. We purchased it back in October 2017 with a commercial tenant in situ. So the building is a semi-detached property that's on a corner position. It's arranged over three floors, about 180 meters square meters worth of internals. And it was arranged as offices and kitchenettes and toilets with three car parking spaces. So we knew that because it used to, back in the day, be a residential, it would have been originally built as a residential, because it had car parking spaces with the property, because of its central location, a stone's throw literally from the train station, from the civic centre, from the court offices, that it would be a great location for residential, and actually would then be in keeping with the rest of the row of houses, which were all residential. Mm-hmm. And so it just made sense. It just made sense. Having said that, our original thought was to convert it into a HMO, not the self-contained units strategy that we ended up going with. And that switch of direction came about when we spoke with an architect to say, you know, can you design a HMO for us? And he came back and said, well, actually, have you considered self-contained units? And once we kind of thought about that, we thought, let's do it. Let's not do the HMO, because with a HMO, you've got all of that additional ongoing operational management that's required to service the property and the tenants. Whereas as four self-contained one-bed units, the tenant moves in, it's a single let, really, to all intents and purposes.
Well, that was the other thing, if I could come in. Can't tell that. But remember, originally, because it was on three floors, we thought it would be three flats. But then the architect came with four, and it was the addition of the fourth flat that made it rival with the HMO, that made it work almost as well. Well, it may be better than the HMO financially.
I'm going to have to jump in here and ask a couple of questions that are burning here. So first one is, did you, when you bought this property, know that's exactly what you wanted to do when the lease ran out? Was that, we're going to buy this, park it for a bit, when the lease runs out, we're going to do our thing? And then the second question is, how did you think about financing it? Because that is a longer term strategy. You've got to get in, hang around, and then eventually you act on what your plan is. So can you just talk us through that?
Yeah, so the answer to the first one is yes, we always thought that we would keep the tenant, not least because when we bought it, they still had 2 years or 1.5 years to run on their existing lease. So we thought that will give us time to go to planning, to work out what we wanted to do, and then to get that planning permission in play for potentially the end of their lease. So definitely residential, we just didn't know what exactly in the residential sphere. In regards to financing, we bought the building cash in the beginning and then went through a refinancing process, which, being our first commercial refinancing, threw up a few little challenges. Yeah, it was our first commercial finance. And I didn't realise that they wanted to know so much. It's not just anti-money laundering and all of the usual stuff that you expect with conveyancing. I think they wanted to know what I wanted for breakfast, what I was going to have next year, what holiday destination, inside leg measurement. Never ending.
They were literally questioning transactions on my personal bank statements. Well, they were questioning. They didn't feel I had enough transactions on my personal bank statement. I mean, it was down to that level of detail. But the other thing that I want to also come in with is planning, because in England it's slightly different than in Wales, and in Wales we don't have a lot of the permitted development rights that you have in England, which again offers us another opportunity for buying commercial property in Wales, because fewer people want to buy it because that planning permitted development is not there. And I think, Nikki, I don't think you've mentioned the purchase price. So people might want to know that.
Yes, it was advertised at 160,000 and we secured it at 148,000. just under the stamp duty level, which was great.
Yeah, just, and we should have probably said this right back at the start. You guys are based mostly, if not all your projects are in Newport, aren't they?
In Wales. Yeah.
And we're based, we also have the same thing where there's not the permitted development, which in England, as you say, underpins commercial valuation. It has given, although it's an opportunity to get on with different types of development, it also is underpinning the valuations, which is making things just slightly more tricky, a bit more expensive. But in when you went for planning then, you'd already sort of looked at the street, I guess, and as you say, looked and thought, well, this has already been residential. So was the change of use straightforward?
Yeah, I think straightforward enough. It took us, I think we engaged the architects in February, submitted our application in December, and got the planning in May. So, but we decided from the start, because HMOs and turning businesses back into residential isn't always welcomed by our council, we decided we wanted to go with an architect who had done this before,
yeah,
and was familiar with our council and with the process. So we did a bit of due diligence trying to find the right architect or the person to move forward with, and then just trying to make sure that our application was as robust as possible with lots of supplementary information to, you know, kind of almost answer the questions that we knew the planners were going to ask around parking, around amenities, and all of that good stuff. We were fortunate because it used to be a commercial building and arranged as 8 offices, that from a parking perspective, we knew that the demand on the building for parking would have been much greater under the commercial remit than it would be under residential. So that's a big deal in our area. And one of the facets that the council often uses to reject planning applications. But it went straight through. We didn't have any appeals, or we didn't need to do any appeals, or we didn't have any rejections or what's the word, comments from neighbours and the like to try and challenge the application.
I mean, if it didn't work, Nikki, did you have a plan B?
Keep the tenant.
Yeah.
Keep the tenant,
We would have continued with the commercial. Or maybe ultimately, you know, changed the kept it as commercial, but maybe split it into serviced offices,
right,
or something of that nature, to see whether we could increase the commercial income for the property.
Yeah. Okay. Great. And I have to ask that you talk about the struggle to get finance for refinancing the actual commercial deal. What about raising the finance for the redevelopment? Does that come from a different source, or have you managed to do that through the same finance?
So the refinance for the refurb has been in part from our cash flow from our rent-to-rent business. It's just so amazing that, you know, you can generate funds from properties that you don't own in addition to your own portfolio. But also we did some research and realized that our local council would offer us preferential loans for 5 years. And so we applied for one of those. So we ended up getting a £90,000 loan from the council, which again, wow, kind of like our total estimated budgeted build cost or conversion cost was £150,000. £90,000 off that, you know, it's a fraction that we then needed to find. And the great thing about our council, and it's probably the same for other local authorities, I'm sure, is that they can agree with you to not start taking the payments till a year after the development has been completed, which again gives you time to replenish the coffers and be in a position to start the loan repayments.
Yeah, it's a great benefit. I was talking to Sunil the other day. I don't know if you know Sunil.
I saw that one, yeah.
And he was saying he's got the same in Kent. Yeah, they've just lots and lots of deals that they've done that have been supported, because what it's doing is providing more housing.
Yeah.
It's great. And I think with the planning, as you say, with the parking, it's going in with your eyes open and knowing, you know, I guess getting as much hand-holding as you need, but knowing what the planning or the council are going to necessarily want from you, and being able to, I guess, judge the project as best you can, but just knowing that, well, if that doesn't work out, I've got plan B and plan C here. But ultimately, yeah, if you can do, if you can get that plan A, then you know you're on a winner. But it's just challenging juggling all those plates, plus having the commitment to do it for 2 or 3 years. You know, it's not easy, because I think one of the things that you brought up there, and I just want to go into for a second, was momentum. So while you're building up these other businesses and cash flow, when the cash flow can go and support development, there's like a big light bulb goes on, like, this is interesting, because you're starting to accelerate things, yeah? And you're starting to push the speed at which you grow through your own self-growth, as it were. But when you go and buy a building and park it for 3 years, you know, there's a challenge that might slow down your momentum. But I guess from what I'm hearing, you managed to refinance some of the element out of that. But do you use private investors' money as well, or have you always tried to do it yourselves?
Well, we do get offered private investors' money. We have got one, if you want to call it private investor. It's more friends and family, on a favour. It's almost a favour. I had to force them to accept interest. So we're paying 2% interest.
Wow.
Just so that it was in a savings account, you see, so it's still attractive. But we do get a lot of inquiries about, because obviously Newport is a great place to invest. You can get a lot for your money. And as we'll talk about the gross development values, there can be a big increase between what you buy and where the value goes. And there can be a lot. So we do get lots of people asking, but we haven't done that as yet.
So, Nikki, yeah, that whole thing about momentum, it's really interesting to hear you say that about using cash flow to do the redevelopment. Are you finding that the HMO business is leading to, you know, that the vehicle you've got going there with some team members as well is now leading to enough cash flow coming off for you to look at other types of strategy and things you wouldn't have done before?
Definitely.
Is that where things are going?
You know, it's almost not quite that you don't have to worry about the cash flow. You always have to have a keen eye on your business. And COVID, if anything, was a real eye-opener for that. But, we know that with our plan, with our focus, getting the money isn't going to be a problem. It's working out if the deal works and making sure that it represents great value to us. Because as Stephanie said, as soon as others see that you're effectively a safe pair of hands for their money, you can turn it around, you can deliver. The end product is one that people want to be part of. Then the money comes to you. The money is not the thing that you need to really worry about, has been our experience.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, Stephanie, you say, well, we haven't really taken any private investment. But some would argue you kind of have, because what you've done is you've set up this system for armchair investors to basically say to you, right, I'd like I want a piece of this HMO stuff. Can you go and find me a building, negotiate on the price, redevelop it, fill it with customers, and then send me back my return on my investment? Now, ultimately, they own the building.
But so we haven't done that yet, though, Jerry.
You haven't? I thought I was looking at your website, you're doing that.
Yeah. We for various reasons, we were going to offer that service, but we haven't, because we've been so much putting our time and energy into other projects. And so for us, the returns for, well, investing for ourselves, the capacity that we want to have, the standard to which we want to do things, has just meant that we haven't.
So if somebody wants to invest in your area, right?
Yeah.
They're going to have to really, really ask you very nicely, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, we're open to JVs, because once we've got three developments that are, well, I say ongoing, but we've got a 12-unit property, the 4-unit property we've already been talking about, and another 4-unit that we're in the process of refinancing. So next year, what we want to do is do other multi-unit block projects, but on a much bigger scale. So in one deal, if it was 28 units, we could double our portfolio if we had got one that's 28 units. So it's that sort of project that we're looking at.
Yeah.
And for that, it would make it more worthwhile to actually have a joint venture partner, perhaps, rather than just a simple investor.
So, So that's my mistake. So that's really interesting, right? Okay, so basically all of the development that you've done in your business in this short period of time is really you've managed to do it without borrowing other people's money. To get your momentum going, you weren't buying assets at the start. You're doing rent-to-rent model.
Yeah.
And that has then allowed you to spill off cash flow to now start investing in your own. And, of course, now you're doing development. So yeah. What you're talking about multiple projects or projects with multiple units. What's the longer-term strategy?
Yeah, that is the longer-term strategy because we just accidentally, I give all credit to Nikki here, but we were looking to buy an HMO, a six-bed HMO. But at the time, there was a lot of competition here, so we kept missing out. Then we saw another property and the lender valuation came in way under what they wanted. So they just stopped communicating with us. The seller just stopped communicating. And so it was a bit disappointing, a bit frustrating. But then we moved to a different kind of property. And for various reasons, there was much less competition. Number one, it was 12 units. One of them was a commercial unit, and that was very important because we had already had some funding through our broker. We'd secured a lender, and we were all getting ready to buy a different property. So when this property came up, we went back to the broker, and they went back to the lender with the property, and the lender said, no, we won't touch that property because it has, out of 12 units, one of them is a shop, and we don't do that. So what we realized is, when you have a multi-purpose, mixed use, not multi-purpose. When you have a mixed use building, commercial and residential, that's actually really an opportunity because you massively reduce the number of people who A, want to buy it and B, can buy it because the financing is more complicated. But because we had already been through and owned a commercial property by this stage, it was much easier for us to get the financing for that property.
Yeah, that's that whole can of worms about you just got to get started. And then it does become easier when you're in the swim, because when you're just getting started, there's so many barriers in commercial that kind of are there to put you off.
Yeah.
I mean, have you found that the professions in the sector have been helpful or sometimes I find it that, you know, even though we've got a reasonable portfolio now, if people don't know us or whatever, they just won't return my calls, they won't send emails, everything takes forever. And you just feel, if I wasn't pushing, this would never happen. I mean, have you found that or have things been totally different in Newport?
You definitely have to stay on top of everybody. And even the people who you think are, you know, strong members of your power team, let's say, you still have to make sure that you're looking after them and making sure that they're clear what you need and when you need it. And that, I think, never stops. So it's definitely a challenge. But I suppose if we become more au fait, more okay, more normal, that's just the way it works. And you just get on, roll up your sleeves and get in.
And one thing I wanted to come in that I'd forgotten from before, Jerry, you know when you said you park your money and leave it for 3 years, I didn't want to give the impression that we had no income from that property from we bought it until now when we're doing it up. Well, there's still no income because we did, of course, have the tenant. First bought it, they were on a lease at 10 grand and over the period it went up to 18 grand a year, and they obviously pay well, not obviously, but they pay all up front at the beginning of the year. So just wanted to let people know that it was washing its face until we
they left. I guess I use that turn of phrase because when I first looked at commercial, I thought it was an investment strategy where you literally park your money and for an interest, for a return. So basically, I'll buy this commercial building because it's got a 10% return on my investment.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hands off and it's very passive and I don't need to do anything until 5 years' time and the tenant moves out. But as you're saying, and as we try and teach on the podcast, you know, there are so many strategies to add value to commercial that it isn't necessarily always just a passive or armchair investment. It can be really active commercial and finding out what the market needs and trying to deliver that. It's just interesting that you decided, right, we know this one's going to have opportunity, we're going to buy it, park it, as I said. Yeah. Still, there's going to be an income from it.
Yes.
But we know that in 2 years' time, we're going to be able to do the redevelopment here and make some good uplift.
Well, it's so interesting, Jerry, because as you say, we bought it in 2017. We didn't actually start. We did the planning 2018-19, May 2019, the planning came through. And again, the tenant was still in, paying their 18,000, happy days. And it was, we had a valuation on it before we started the development. So that was March this year. Thinking, when was it? March 2021. And it was valued by a mortgage lender valuer at £300,000 just because of the planning permission.
Yeah.
So that's a property that we bought for 148, spent about £3,000 getting the planning permission, and we've almost doubled, you know, the opportunity.
Yes. Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? Yeah. It's a paperwork exercise. Yeah.
Yeah. With paper.
And so nothing has changed.
And exactly. We could have just sold it at that point and walked away with £150,000 in the bank.
Yeah, but you've decided, sleeves up, we're going in.
Well, tell them the next part, that it was valued at, what's it valued at after the development?
So post-development, it's valued at £500,000.
Wow, and how much you haven't spent on the redevelopment?
We had forecast, so again, bought, let's just call it 150, although we paid 148, but bought for 150. We had budgeted or thought that we would spend 150 on the refurb. And then obviously it would be revalued at around the 500,000. That 150 refurb has gone up. We're now circa 200,000 all in. It's a bit under 200, but let's just call it 200 for the ease of figures. And the uplift in the refurb was really, we had underestimated the cost of splitting the utilities.
Yeah.
So our budget for that was 10,000, and we're going to spend 20,000 on just splitting the utilities.
Yeah.
So that's the gas, the water, and the electrics. And then we've seen delays with the COVID and other elements that have pushed it on.
Price increases.
At an extra 50,000. And also, actually, we've decided as part of that to spend about £15,000. Re-rendering the whole of the outside of the property, which wasn't in the original budget.
Yeah, but it's going to look great, and by the sounds of it, there's going to be 200,000 left in that deal, something like that. Yeah, amazing. What an overnight success.
There's been no problems at all, have there, Nicky?
Piece of cake.
Yeah.
It's great, though. I mean, that's such a good story. Thanks very much for sharing it. And you know, I just love the fact that you guys have not stuck to one strategy. You're developing out into other areas. You've got an eye on even though, as I say, it's 5 years, which, you know, is still a long period of time. You can do so much in 5 years, but it's just the fact that you're already looking at other strategies, and you've been playing the long game. So this project we're talking about is playing the long game. And I think some people think, A, you get into commercial and all these people start telling you can't do it, or no, or they don't return your call, so they give up. And then others think, well, you know, it's not happening for me straight away, but actually it just takes a bit of time.
Yeah.
You just have to accept it does take time, but the returns can be really good if you just have a bit of patience and persistence, of course, Nicky.
Indeed. And I think part of it is you just have to do it. At the beginning, you know, of our journey back in 2016, we hadn't even discussed that. Commercial wasn't even on our strategy. It didn't feature. But as you start to do things, opportunities come to you. You start to see different things. And then it seems less scary because, of course, you've already done all of the other bits to get you to that point. And with fresh eyes at that, when you're looking out, it doesn't seem so unachievable. And actually, one of the things that I take away from this journey is that anything is possible and everything is possible. You just have to apply yourself and have the right mindset to bring it to you.
Brilliant. Well, my next question, Nicky, was going to be the three top tips you would give somebody who's just starting out. I think you gave us at least two there.
Yeah.
What's the third one? What about you, Stephanie? What would you say for somebody who's just getting started? You know, whether they're starting off with resi or they're maybe a little bit further down the track, but they're starting to look at commercial. What would you say to somebody who's looking at doing that step?
Yeah. Well, I think when you're starting out, you're often looking up at the top of the mountain and you're seeing where you want to get to at the top of the mountain. It looks so overwhelming when you look up the mountain and see how far away you are from it. But like every journey, it starts with the first step. So I always encourage people, yes, obviously have the vision of the top of the mountain. You're not going to get there in one leap, but you can, and you have everything that you need to take the very next step that's in front of you. And sometimes that very next step is to find out more information. Sometimes it might be to put an offer on a property. So you take the next step in front of you that's taking you to where you want to go. And I think podcasts like this are so real because you've got real people coming on and giving you all the different flavors and the different insights of how each person does it that really can open up people's minds as to what the opportunities for them are and what the next step might be.
Yeah, I think it's that whole thing about context. People don't know what they don't know.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know what it's like on social media, let's not go too far down that, but, you know, they talk about, well, why would you possibly spend any money on training when you can just read a book or something? It's like, gee whiz, you don't know what you don't know, you know? And those training courses that you can go on that open up so many different avenues that you didn't think were even possible on how to do property. Pretty much all the issues that people that have or challenges they have been done by somebody else.
Yes.
They've overcome them. You just need to find the person who's overcome it. And on you go. You just got to have that mindset that there is a way around this. I just don't know it yet. I have to find somebody who does and who's done it before.
And definitely. It's so fun learning, isn't it? It's so fun. When you have your mindset on, you know, I'm going to do commercial property or I'm going to do CMO, which is much more lucrative. Of course, I'm going to find out what Jerry's got and, you know, be part of Jerry's training, because why would you try to work it out on your own?
Definitely. What I was just going to add in there is it really is about surrounding yourself with people that have already done it. If you stay in your existing bubble where you're surrounded by people who haven't done it, then it's going to continue to look scary. It's going to continue to look challenging. But actually, if you're having a conversation or listening to a podcast where all of these people have done it and they're regular, ordinary folk, it lifts the mystery.
Yes.
It helps you with what you need to do. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, let's just move on to that quickly before we finish up. You guys have got so much content out there, some fabulous stuff you've done. Can you maybe just give our audience some details on where they can find you? I will put them in the show notes as well, but you've got a fabulous book that's been doing really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's have some details on some of the places and resources that you've got.
Well, the hub of it all is renttorentsuccess.com, and that's the one where we help people get started in property without buying it, the ethical six-step system. So it's renttorentsuccess.com with a number 2. And there is the book there. There's the podcast there. There's a free guide and masterclass. Everything is there. For HMO Heaven, it's hmoheaven.co.uk. And we do have some case studies there. The Stowhill Studios is the 12-unit block. We've got some videos on Instagram, Stephanie T Property, where we actually walk around the project that we're doing right now, which is the 4 unit.
Great.
And it's in mid refurb. That was a few weeks ago. Those two places, renttorentsuccess.com and hmoheaven.co.uk.
That's fantastic. Okay, super. So thank you both for joining us. It's been a real pleasure to speak to you. I do hope, and this is the oddity of this world at the moment, I do hope we get to actually meet soon.
Yes. Yeah,
and it was ironic that in the summer there, it turned out we were all in Bath on the same day, weren't we? And we didn't know until afterwards, and I was back in Scotland and you were probably back in Wales.
Yes.
But, you know, hopefully we'll get together soon at some networking event or something when the world goes back to normality.
Yeah, and of course I'm in Scotland sometimes because I used to live in Edinburgh for 15 years and I often go back. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
Just a matter of time before we
meet. Indeed. Indeed. Super. It's been so so enjoyable to have a listen to your story and some of the things you guys are up to. I love following you on social media because you've always got some positive things going on. And there's always, well, as we were talking before we came on air, awards and things that you're doing. Your journey's been fantastic. And I hope our audience really enjoyed the fact that you're now moving into commercial and how you're doing that. And I look forward to keeping track of what you're up to next. So thanks very much for joining us.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jerry. See you soon. Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Nikki and Stephanie. Not only have they achieved great success relatively quickly in the world of property, but as you can hear, they're really genuine people with an interest in the success of others. If you've not already done so, I would suggest you tune into their podcast show. We have details of where you can find the show and other contact information for the ladies in our show notes. So thank you again to both Nikki and Stephanie for joining me on the CPI podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation. I also want to say thank you to Noreen for her recent review of our show on iTunes. It is actually genuinely amazing what reviews can do to help lift the show to a wider audience. It's really helpful. And if you enjoy our weekly content, then please take a moment to leave a positive review. Let us know who you are. If there's anything you would like us to cover, get in touch also and let us know particular episodes you'd like us to talk about in the future. One last thing, we've just a few slots left on our upcoming commercial property behind the scenes tour day. You'll get the chance to immerse yourself in commercial property for a whole day to see if this strategy is right for you. We'll take you on our own journey through commercial property, showing you some of our mature locations right through to our current redevelopment. It'll be a fun, relaxing and informative day. Details of it will be in the show notes and if you go directly to the Commercial Property Investor website. So that's all for this episode. Make sure you take at least one more step towards your next commercial deal. And I'm really looking forward to talking to you again very soon.